From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Later tonight, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with stories of high strangeness. But here's what's happening. Well, let's hear it for us for a change. The independent panel that oversees the U.S. Postal Service has denied the agency's request to increase the cost of mailing a letter by 2 cents. It would have gone to 46 cents. In July, the Postal Service proposed raising first-class postage from 44 to 46 cents as part of a strategy for dealing with a worsening financial crisis. Nobody's mailing letters anymore. Everybody's emailing them or sending e-bills in and things like that. As a matter of fact, the last time you pay a bill online, you get a statement from the company. It'll pop up online and say, do you want to just go with, you know, without having to send you any hard letter? And a lot of people are doing that. The Postal Service lost $3.8 billion last year, and the agency has been seeking other rate increases as well, including higher fees for periodicals, postcards, parcels. The new rates would have taken effect on January 2nd. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. The nation's economic growth tailed off sharply in the spring and probably isn't faring any better right now, according to the Commerce Department reporting that gross domestic product, the broadest measure of the economy's health, expanded at what they call a feeble 1.7% annual rate the April to June quarter. AIG, which became a lightning rod for criticism over government bailouts, said it has reached a deal to repay billions of dollars it received during the credit crisis. The plan would return a profit to us, the taxpayers, who footed the bill for AIG's near collapse in September 2008. Let's see if that happens. Fisher-Price is recalling more than 10 million tricycles, toys, and high chairs over safety concerns. The Consumer Product Safety Commission said that two of the products being recalled involved injuries in the recall of about 7 million Fisher-Price trikes and Tough Trikes toddler tricycles. The agency is aware of 10 reports of children being hurt. Six of them required medical attention. The trikes, some of which feature popular characters like Dora the Explorer and Barbie, have a protruding plastic ignition key near the seat that the children can strike, sit on, or fall, leading to injuries. As we've been reporting, U.S. Secretary on Homeland Security Janet Napolitano says that she's not in favor of lifting the ban on liquids on passenger airplanes after news that the United Nations Aviation Branch could consider removing the ban as soon as 2012. The number of heightened security measures have been introduced in recent years, including full-body scanners that many European Union countries consider too intrusive to implement. New technology able to detect liquid explosives is currently in the works, including scanners that can quickly inspect both sealed and unsealed bottles. On Wednesday, a top official with the International Civil Aviation Organization said he expected gels and liquids to be allowed back on aircrafts within a couple of years. Private investigator Doug Hagman, who looks at terrorism for us on Coast to Coast AM. Doug, good or bad idea when they finally get the equipment done?
Well, you know, speaking from my experience in the investigative and security industry, it's my opinion, based on that experience, that the entire process is inept and basically unnecessary in terms of looking at various items like liquids, gels, and anything. Really, there's virtually no way to screen for any possible threat, every possible item that could be used as a weapon, including such liquid gels and other items, even with this new equipment. It's really a fool's errand. That said, we are trading our freedoms for this false sense of security, trading our privacy and freedoms for really ineffective passenger screening. Effective screening involves multiple levels of passenger assessment, including behavioral profiling. And
sure,
I think we really need to have better trained security operatives trained to identify the risks of the 99.99% of non-threatening flying public. We need to stop that 0.1% or whatever small percentage it is before.
Well, you know, I was telling you, Doug, a few months ago that as I was going through the airport security in some city I was in, they were shaking down an 80-year-old woman.
Exactly.
I mean, they had her hands out. They had the little metal detector wand going up and down her body, and I looked at that and went, oh, my gosh.
It's the greatest casualty, you know, has been our freedoms and our common sense, and indeed we have to get both of them back in order for us to prevail.
Doug, also, what's the latest on this apparent terrorist scare in Europe? France, England, they're up in Germany, they're all on guard. What's going on there?
Well, I think the authorities have done a great job in really taking apart the threat to the UK, at least the imminent portion of the threat to the UK, and parts of the threat to Europe. But that threat is still out there. In fact, the United States is high on the target list. And I think we have to exercise extreme vigilance here over the next, between now and the end of the year, as we have in the past. I think that overall, their intent is just as great as it was immediately following 9/11.
Okay, Doug, thanks so much for everything you do. Actor Tony Curtis, great actor, is dead, died at his Las Vegas area home. He shaped himself from a 1950s movie heartthrob into a respected actor, showing a determined streak that served him well in such films as Sweet Smell of Success, The Defiant Ones, Some Like It Hot, and Houdini.
What? You said you wanted to be in the act.
Yes, but not now.
Oh, come on, I need you.
What do I have to do?
Get in the box.
Well, what does it do?
You'll see later.
Oh, Harry, I'm not going to go in there.
Get in the box.
The Oscar-nominated actor died at the age of 85 of cardiac arrest at his home in the Las Vegas area city of Henderson. One of the stories at coasttocoastam.com at our highlights reel, that's the carousel of pictures that goes around and around. A pig born with only its two front legs has become a local celebrity in China after learning to walk. The 10-month-old pig manages to balance and walk on her two front legs, even though she now weighs more than 50 kilograms. I do not think they are going to eat her. But if you want to take a look at the pig, it's at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, CeCe Stevens joins us. Among the things we'll talk about, the crystal skulls. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. 2 hours tonight with CeCe Stevens before we bring in investigative reporter Linda Moulton-Howe. We'll take calls next hour with CeCe as we talk about crystal skulls. She grew up surrounded with interests in astrology and UFOs. She is very adept in astrology, numerology, biomagnetic healing. Lots to talk with her about dowsing. She's been used by the police department to help solve crimes, as well as used by ranchers to locate water. She's also the co-creator of the Crystal Skull Festival's World Mysteries. She'll tell you about that, too. Welcome back, CeCe Stevens. About a little more than a year since you've been on, CeCe. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And how are you doing, George?
Good,
thanks for having me back on again.
My pleasure. Seems to be an incredible interest in crystal skulls these days. How come?
Well, it's been the interest that's been there for a while. I would say more so lately, in that we have the Mayan prophecies that are coming up. And with those is that interest that there is the skulls in there that have been talking, that have been a part of the Mayan prophecies. And so I would imagine that's part of it that would be in there. I know each person that's had a skull or had involvement with skulls, in the past, and that they've brought him in as well, that goes all the way back with Mitchell Hedges' skull, Bobbin, who brought in with his, and then going through time on that, has just had this fascination with it, that the mystery, the allure to the skull itself as to, like the Indiana Jones.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And there are, what, 13 skulls that we know of so far?
Right. There are 13. There's said to be 13 ancient skulls. And when these are brought together, we'll bring an alignment together at the 2012.
Tell me your interest, CeCe, in the crystal skulls.
I'll tell you, my interest on the skulls is I look at the crystal skulls themselves. Are resonators, the crystal, as in with your radio waves. And mine is, if we could bring those together, put it out there and send that signal through this crystal, or in this case, it is a skull. We associate with the face of the skull and the face of ourselves and being able to talk. If we could take that and send that energy out there and that, could we not bring about a positive effect to where there has been negative. Now, if there are negative energies, can we reverse it?
Yeah,
with the positive, if we're sending the positive out with it. And so through this is what got my fascination in looking and talking to other people that had skulls or the interest in crystals. I like to do jewelry, and I'm interested in crystals themselves. And so this kind of led up to the skulls, and then coming together with Bill Holman and his skull, the Mitchell Hedges skull, and taking a look at the story and everything that went behind that, the allure, the mystery, and each one of them just kind of brought more of that dimension in there, seeing something, you know, a little bit more that to the story. Each piece brings more to the story. And so for me, it was more about research. As you know, I grew up with my dad being a researcher as well.
Sure.
And so looking through the research on this, of sitting down and saying, what are all the stories and bringing those together? Well, in doing that, then that brought questions, and other people had questions. And that's what led me to doing 999. Last year was the awakening of saying there's people they're wanting to know. So did the 999, which led into the 10-10-10 that I have going on now, the sacred knowledge.
And then we're going to have 11-11-11 and 12-12-12.
That's right. And the 11-11-11 then comes into sacred places. And it's bringing that matrix in there. So in order to learn and understand, you have to have repetition. Bringing it over and over and over to really understand, get it all down, that everything is in there. We're like children.
Now, and these skulls, though, these 13 skulls, where were they found?
The 13 skulls, as I understand it, are located all around the world, and that there are 13 locations that they will be found and brought up from, which goes into the Matrix, Stonehenge, possibly, the pyramids, Belize with the temples, Palenque, Chichen Itza, all around the world. And then there's Atlantis. So you would have each of these areas, as I understand it, is having a piece of that skull. When those all come together in one spot, that's where the creation begins.
What do you think, Cece, creates this mystical power of a crystal skull? Do they pick up something from the sun? I mean, or is there some vibration on the planet? Is it in the universe? What does it? What gives it that energy?
I personally feel that the skulls themselves have a vibration, that they're picking up that earth energy vibration.
Okay.
Is what they're picking it up. That's my feeling on it. But, you know, each person that has a skull that comes into one, it's like the skulls pick you. You don't pick them. I went through so many years without, and now I'm surrounded in them. And it was like one after another came around, and I think I've got like 15 of them over here now.
Now, when you say they pick you, I mean, when you walk by it, they don't say, Cece, get over here.
Cece, come here.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Oops,
no.
You said that. I mean, how do you know you're attached to this?
Everybody has a different experience. In my case, I wanted to know more about them, and so that's what led me to the Mitchell Hedges, which led me and brought me into the gym show and put me on this. Just something was pulling me and telling me I need to go on this, and I caught the shuttle bus that took me on to each area. I was with my sister, and it was to get off here. No, I don't want to get off here. Let's continue on. And then coming to an area and saying, this is it. What's it? I'm not sure, but this is it. And getting off the shuttle bus and going and looking and just feeling myself drawn. And I was drawn right to a room. And when I went in, even though this room was just, and I have to tell you, since then, that the hotel room has not had those skulls there. The room was filled in crystal skulls. And one particular skull in itself, it was like if you look in a room and there's a sparkle.
Yeah.
How is it that one little sparkle grabbed you out of an entire room?
Or a person. It's got
right.
That same
exactly.
Kind of
exactly. You have a room full of people. Why is it one, you went boom, and you're really drawn to them? Well, it's exactly the same thing. And this is what happened with me with Bob, is I was drawn into, and then once I saw him, I immediately connected, and it was like I had to have him. Didn't matter. Yeah. I had to have him. And it was not something I would normally have gone or the expense I would have gone.
What are some of the powers, Cece, of the skulls? Healing powers? What else is out there? What can they do?
Each of them, I feel, has a specific purpose. Joanne Parks has Max, and those that have been around Max have said that they have felt connected into a healing power that came from Max. And then I have mine, Bob, and I've got to tell you, from the last show, when I just acquired him not too much before that,
right,
to now, and he's Bob the Skull of Wishes, he has literally granted every wish that anybody's put on him. And it was, it's been amazing how it works. And I'll go in there and say, okay, Bob, this is what I need to do. And sure enough, it's all taken care of.
What's the procedure for someone when they deal with Bob? Do they physically have to see him, touch him?
No.
How does that work?
Nope. I've had people that have gone to the net and said, how do I get together with Bob? And I'm, well, let me just send you a picture. I have this. Look at this picture. Touch the screen, look at his picture, and go with that. Print his picture up, and there it is. Go with that. The energy of Bob is there.
Now, you can be unrealistic, though. What if someone says, I want $1 million?
Bob,
I
mean, will grant it.
No.
Okay, let's look at an example. You go in and you say to Bob, I want to be able to have $1 million.
All right.
Okay, let's just say, here we'll use a theory of one person out there.
I mean, doesn't it have to be, Cece, realistic? I mean,
it is realistic.
Well, can you go to Bob and say, I want to live forever? That's not realistic, right?
Well, of course not. That's unrealistic. That's something that can't actually feasibly be done.
Okay. All right. So let's go back to the example.
However, we could. Let's just stretch that one out. You could live forever because if you write a book and it's printed and it's in the Library of Congress, have you not attained immortality?
Then I live forever, don't I?
Then you live forever, don't you? And as long as somebody's talking about you, Edgar Allan Poe, Sherlock Holmes, as long as somebody is talking about you, are you not continuing on and living forever?
I guess, yeah.
Jesus Christ,
is
he not living forever?
Yeah.
See, there's a trick question, huh?
All right. Well, let's go back to the $1 million.
Right. Going back to the $1 million. Now, you have somebody that sits there and they say, I wish I had, Bob, I want $1 million. Give me $1 million. And so Bob sits there and, that's a tough one. We'll go with that. So then this person, they go over and they're sitting there in the chair and they're thinking, here I am. I don't have any money. And they're sitting there and or they're outside and they're looking at the ground, better still. They're looking at the ground and they turn around and they've got this rock in their hand and they're looking at it. And then they, I wonder. And then they go put a couple of eyes on it and they look at it and they're like, well, look at there. I've got me a little pet rock. See where that went?
I see what you mean.
Now, here's this goofy rock that a couple of little eyeballs were stuck on. Then you go get one of those goofy cricket cages. And you put it in it, and you say, oh, look, you have a pet rock. You never have to feed it. It doesn't give you grief. You don't have to worry about a cat box, a litter box, a bird box. You don't have to worry about any of these things.
You don't have to walk it.
You don't have to walk it. It's the most trouble-free friend pet you ever had. So I guess I'll call it a pet rock. So then you find a couple of people in there, I want to have one of those. So they get one, and then you go over there and you pitch it off to Mattel, Hasbro, or any of these. Oh, my gosh, that's a fantastic idea. I'll give you $1 million for your idea.
Now, what about the desire, though, with Bob? Does the person have to be righteous, believe in this, or, what if they're just trying to play a game? Let's pull something on Bob, Would it work if someone goes in there and they're just goofy about it?
Well, that's a good question.
See, I don't think it would. I think if the skull works, you believe it does.
I
think it detects whether the person is serious or not, or needy or not. I don't think.
I would agree with that. I would agree with you on that one. That if you went in with a serious intent, then it can be manifested for you.
Absolutely.
But if you go into it with a sarcastic intent,
or evil.
Yeah, or bad, evil intent, bad intent in there, then, well, absolutely, then something like that is not going to probably go out in there, unless, of course, maybe if you've put evil on your skull. Me, I put a white light with Bob, always have.
All right, CeCe, when we come back, I want to talk with you about your Crystal Skull Festival's event and the grouping of the 10-10-10 function as well. And then next hour, we'll take phone calls with CeCe Stevens right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we've got a floating format night for you tonight. Next hour, CeCe Stevens will take your phone calls on Crystal Skulls. Later on in the program, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us for her two-hour special tonight, followed by some conversations with Linda in that second hour. When we come right back, more on Crystal Skulls and 10-10-10 on Coast to Coast AM. CeCe, take a few moments. Tell us about this 10-10-10 event and then this 10-10-10 date, which I find fascinating as we talked about next year in November, the year after in December. Go ahead.
All righty. The 10-10-10, the conference that I've put together, is from October the 8th, Meet the Speakers Dinner, on up to Monday, October the 12th, I believe it is. No, October the 11th.
The 11th, that's right.
And I have speakers that I've brought in from around the world, 18 different speakers that have ended up coming to me out of this. I started out with one grouping, and then it went into another grouping. And 10-10-10 evolved itself. So I've kind of been along for the ride on this one, actually. And each of the people that came in presented themselves, and this is somebody that you need to have in for 10-10-10 because of it being the sacred knowledge. They have that sacred knowledge. And so it has Leah Scallon was in from last year, and she was a guest that came in, a client, a paying guest that came in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I traveled to L.A. with her. Took her out there. She's in from Australia, and I offered to take her out to L.A. She needed to go out. I was like, well, after this is over, I'll be happy to give you a ride. So I took her out there, and in the course of going out, this woman is just filled with such brilliance and such light. And she started singing, and she's a recording artist, I found out. And when she sang, it was like angels came out of her mouth. And then she left me this album. I said, well, here's an album of mine. And we'd spent 3 days while we were out in California. And when she talks, it's like listening to the storytellers. And so when we ended it, I said, when I do 10-10-10 next year, I absolutely want you there as a speaker. And so one by one, each of my people has come to me in that way that I've brought about that has come in.
And they all bring their own special skills and knowledge.
Absolutely. Each and every one of them, none of them is, it's not a repetition of one. It's just like another, just like another. All 18 of them are as individual and unique of each other for what they have to offer and that they're bringing in. And if I don't think I could have found a better lineup of people that have been brought in to me.
What's your website for the event, CeCe?
The website is www.crystalskullfestival.com. Or worldmysteriesconference.com. It can go to either one.
Is Bob the Crystal Skull going to be there?
Bob is. Bob will be out on the registration table, so anybody that wants to, when they come in, they can touch Bob and make a wish, or they can set some time up if they want to be with him.
So he's not going to be hermetically sealed, is he?
No. Bob loves to be touched. He loves to be experienced. Those that have come in contact with Bob's have noticed he smiles. He's like he's smiling at them, and they feel that energy off of him as well. And so, he's out there. He sits up on his dish, and he was that way last year. I had him set up on the table, and quite a few people were kind of surprised that I had him up there. And it's like, well, there he is. He's right there for you to experience and touch and make your wish and, see what happens with it and let me know where it works for you.
Heck, CeCe, I may show up, put a hole in the table, stick my head up there, and maybe people rub me for luck, huh?
That could be quite interesting.
You never know. And then 11, 11, 11, 12, 12, 12, are you going to do the same thing? Are you expecting those kinds of events to occur?
This is the sacred knowledge. The next one is sacred places. And the speakers that I'm bringing in through that one is those that have got the knowledge of the different places, like Easter Island, Stonehenge,
mm-hmm.
the temples, the pyramids. There's that certain energy that's applied to each of those. The crop circles, all of these all play into it. And so that's where that one's coming. I have had my venue in Tempe, and I'm looking next year. I'm kind of drawn between a couple of places, actually. And I was looking at Albuquerque as an area that I like.
Great spot.
But I'm also really drawn to Socorro, New Mexico. Both of those places, and it's like Socorro I've always felt very connected to.
Well, you know, Socorro's where Lonnie Zamora, the late cop, spotted a UFO there, right?
Yes. You know, my dad and I, Wendell Stevens, my dad and I went on when he was putting his book together, The Aztec Crash. And we went out there with Rob Simone and Michael Hesseman, and we investigated that. And I have to tell you, sometime if you want, we can jump into a story on that one that you will really enjoy, of the people of synchronicity that fell into place for us while we were out there. And we had an adventure on our own while we were there. It was pretty incredible.
Was your father's loss sudden, or did you expect that?
Both. I did not expect him to die so soon. His health was going down, failing him.
You saw it coming, but you didn't expect it then, I guess.
Right. I'm thankful. I have a positive attitude about my father's death. I'm thankful that he had a heart attack at home and went very quickly. I am thankful that he did not have a long, drawn-out suffering that went with it. He had went into his respiratory, was broke down finally. He was finally reduced to where he had to get around in a chair and with an oxygen bottle. And he really just did not like that because he was the Energizer Bunny. Everybody knew him as the Energizer. That man could run any one of us to the ground. And including me, I was like, oh, man, slow down. You know, you might be twice my age, but dang.
Cece, let me ask you a little bit about your work with police departments and helping ranchers locate water as well. We've got about 12 minutes with you before we'll take phone calls next hour with you. But tell me about the work with the police departments. What did you do for them? How did they find you? What did they want you to do?
Okay, what I did was locating missing people. And I have an adaptness at remote viewing. This is another one of my many talents that I was born with and grew up with and has just been an integral part of my personality. And in that, I've seen occasions where you see something on the news, somebody's missing, and I'm able to sit down and tap in and say, I'm Bob Smith. Where am I? And then be able to see the surroundings that are around me, and I am at that point, physically, that individual, and can tell you what I'm seeing around me, what is about me, how are my injuries, and things of that nature.
How many of those cases ended up tragically, where the person that you became in the remote viewing session ended up dead?
You know, there's been a couple of them, and the reason being was to sit down and sadly, and let the police know this is where someone is and this is what you need to do, and not being taken serious. And then being told, if you will just look in this area, just go in this area and look, is all you need to do, because this person, I can think of one case right off the bat.
Tell us what happened.
And that was a young gal at Sanavir Mission. And this, her name was Diane. And this was 1993. And I tried letting the sheriff's department know. I could see very clearly this woman. I could see her bound and laying in the desert, and I could see her exposed and being exposed to animals. And that she was weak and had been beaten, and they needed to get to her. And they put it off, and then finally she was found. Sadly, she was found after she had died, but she was in the exact location where I'd said she was, and she was bound, and coyotes had got her.
Now, did the police ever look at you as a possible suspect because you told them things that nobody else really knew?
Yeah, see, that's the catch. That's the catch-22 in all of this. Because you can give them all of that information. And then they can, if you say, well, let me go out to the area, and you go out to the area and say, this is where it is. Now, doesn't that look really suspicious?
And you may, you know, a little piece of your hair falls off. Now your DNA is on the scene, and you're really up the creek.
That's right. So that's why you don't go to those areas, because of that very, very reason. So they're either going to take your call and say you're a crackpot, or they're going to take you serious, one of the two.
What did they do with you eventually? Did any of them take you seriously?
Yes, some of them have taken me serious. Some have gone ahead and given me a call and said, okay. And those are the ones that have known me. So, you know, what do you think on this when we're looking? Or on a couple of them, I've gone in and said, just humor me. Just humor me and go in and you know, on this one. You know, the last one was a gal that I went to high school with. And it was kind of curious as to how I connected out and the intensity behind it. And she was like a sharp individual and everything. And I went to the forest department and I, you know, seeing her up on Mount Lemmon up here in the forestry area and could see her car and see everything. And I finally convinced them to go check the area. What can it lose at this point? And they checked it. And sure enough, they found her. And it turned out it was a gal I went to high school with.
Oh, my.
And prior to that, we'd had a lot of lively conversations, very intelligent woman and everything. But she took such a hard hit to the head that now she has memory loss. She doesn't remember anything. And then, it was just a whole chain of events. It was really sad after that, actually.
Did you find any missing children who just wandered away?
I have, and I've called and, you know, take a look in this area and helped out on that one. I've had a lot of good, and, you know, it's a balance. I've had some that have turned out real good and some that didn't turn out so good, or some that were just totally ignored and you get frustrated, because it's like, if you want to really find, are you not going to take every stone and turn it?
I would if I were a police officer.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, see, but, you know, that isn't always the case.
I would guess, CC, the police officers that did call you for help are probably listeners to Coast, because they're tuned in. They understand what this is.
Yes, I agree with you. There's those that did listen. We're very much in tuned or open to, at least open to ideas in there of, you know, at least I'm open to it. I'll give it a shot and see what happens and go with that one. And so, there are those that are open, and then there are those. But, you know, here's another one to look at, too, George. Somebody goes out, and they're missing. You're out there, you're in the desert, or you're in a car accident, or you're here, you're there, and you're missing. What is your instinct to do? It's to jump out and go in prayer. Please, God, have someone help find me.
Yeah.
Please, God, do something, do this or do that.
Or eventually you do that.
Or you're sending out your messages to your loved ones. I love you. I don't know if you're going to find me. You're thinking about them, but you are sending out that intense signal. And that signal is like that radio wave that's going out there. And anybody that's tapped in is going to be able to pick up that signal. So maybe somebody that's a little bit more tuned into something is going to be more adept at being able to find.
Make it work.
Yeah, make it work in there. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, a good example is my dad. My dad was always like, how'd you do that? He had a crystal on his watch, and he lost the crystal off of it, and he called me up, and he was all upset. And I said, what's the matter, Pops? And he says, the crystal just popped off my watch, and I can't find it anywhere. He says, I've looked and looked and looked, and I can't find it. And so I says, well, were you by the bedroom door? And he goes, well, I was. I said, go to the bedroom door. Put your hand on the wall, slide it down on the floor, and take a look right there between the door and the carpet, and it slid right between. And so he went over, walked over there, and ran his hand down there, and he goes, well, we won't use the explicits that he used, but he used a couple of them. And then,
yeah, don't do that. We have to beep you out.
Yeah. Beep, beep, beep. We found them. He says, how did you manage that? And I says, well, it's just I just happened to see the crystal. That's where it was. It's, you know, I am the crystal. Where am I? You know, I am the flower. Where am I? I am the person. Where am I? And all. And so, it's not so much that it's a talent on my own. Everybody has the gift. Everybody has a talent. Some are just a little bit more open to it than others.
Tell me about how you use dowsing, because I'm convinced you don't use it just to find water.
No. Dowsing can be used for whatever you want it to be. I personally make dowsing rods. I make the L rods. And I sat down and I took my L rods and I put a bit, as one example, I wanted to find out, can you go find minerals, gold and silver, things along that line, or people for that fact. You can take a dowsing rod and go over a map. Where's the missing person? Visualize them, and your rod's going to take me there or take you there. Okay, so in this case, I went over the map, and I was looking, and I wanted to find a gold or silver mine to work. So I took the map of Arizona and went over that, and I had an area where it crossed, and I had a person that was with me circle the area where it crossed. So then we got a map that was more closed in on that, and we kept honing in and honing in until we had it pinned down with a BLM map right down into a section. I took that point, I went into BLM, and I said, I want to lay a claim on this area right here where that X is. So they said, okay, they went in and took a look at the X, and they came back, and they said, okay, that's where you want to go. I says, yep. He says, well, you know, that used to be a mine that was there. And I says, great, I want to go ahead and lay a claim on it. And he says, okay. I says, but tell me about the mine. He said, it was a silver mine, and it was a Jesse Benton work, the Tortolina Mountains, and it employed, I think it was 2,000 people. Before they hit water. And then when they hit water, then they couldn't work the mine anymore because it kept flooding everything out on them.
Too much.
Yeah. And so then, of course, everybody lost their jobs after it because the water couldn't be worked out. Well, then going forward in time, trying to work that silver mine, the ranchers up there wouldn't, because they're trying to ranch. And mining and ranching do not mix, because you've got your cattle that want to go get something to drink where your water flow is. But then they go up where the mines are in the shafts, they drop in, and then they lose their cows. So anytime you're trying to do one or the other, in this case, on this one, it was creating a lot of problems.
So can't you also use dowsing, though, almost like a yes and no truth detector?
Yes. Yes, you could. It's the same as with the pendulum. You could use it for yes and no to go or to draw out, point something out. When I made one of my L rods, I went into a Home Depot where I was getting my copper, because I make them out of copper.
Right.
And I went in there and I had one rod, not both, and using for an X, but just with one rod. And I stood there, and when my rods are active, they get very cold in your hands. So you're holding them and you've got your body heat hitting it, but it's getting cold. It stays really, really cold in your hand. So I'm sitting there and the rods are feeling very icy. So I asked, where is the copper that I need? And I had no intentions of going on my own, just wherever this rod took me. And I followed it, and I pointed ahead, and so I went forward, and then it swerved to the left, and I went to the left, and it, you know, swerved this way and that way, and I followed and followed and followed, and then it turned around and pointed straight at me. So I stopped, and I looked around, and sure enough, to the left, there was the copper.
And
how about
me,
that?
Tell me how long you've been doing dowsing, since you were a kid?
I got into dowsing when I was in my, more in my teens, like 16, around in there. I got together with a woman when I was about 10, 11 years old. And I was very intrigued by the different things that she did and could do, and was very psychic and a lot of the things. And I had been used to, as a child, seeing those that had crossed over, and seeing the dead people.
Uh-huh.
And along, you know, different things in that area. And so she came in and she says, you know, you don't need all of these tools. You're very powerful in your own right. You just need to be able to build to it.
Cece, stay with us. We're going to take phone calls all hour next with you on Coast to Coast AM.